Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 187. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it's hardware, software, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, a.k.a. the Ice Machine, and I'm here with my good friend, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Stephen McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Mr. Coop. In some ways, it's going really well, and then in other ways, I have no problem admitting I'm at least slightly depressed.
What happened? What's going on? Whose mom do I need to call to have it corrected? What's happening?
Well, I guess your mom.
Oh, okay.
I have two conferences now coming up next. I've done two this year already. I've done Northwest Linux Fest, and I've done Chicago CompTIA Channel Con, and you're not going to be at the next two, which one of them is FalseCon Philadelphia, August 22nd, and the other one is OLF in Columbus, Ohio. And it looks like, if I'm not mistaken, I'm also not going to be able to see Martin Rambo Obando at either one of those either.
Oh, so. Dang. Yeah, I can't make it out to OLF this year, unfortunately, for the third year in a row due to circumstances. I'm just going to have to start stockpiling cash or robbing places to make sure I have just enough money to take care of things. But yes, stuff comes up all the time, especially with these damn kids. You know how they are.
Yes.
But yeah, I'll pass along the word to my parents and let them know you didn't raise me right. And here's a guy's phone number. Dude, episode 187. That's very appropriate based on all the, you know, Straight Outta Compton's and theaters. I mean, you have those Straight Outta, you know, memes showing up all over the place. I'm hollering 187, and I can't even finish that lyric on the show because we're family friendly.
Yeah, 187 on a Windows user, out in the open Windows user.
Did you hear that, Door? That was me biting my tongue.
Okay, I hope it was tasty.
Yeah.
I will say really quick, I was shocked. I'm going to try to get someone on the show. I'll talk about them next week, whether or not I can get them on the show or not. But I was almost shocked. I was able to find more vendors at Chicago CompTIA ChannelCon utilizing open source hardware than I was able to find at a Linux conference.
That's interesting.
It was shocking, first off, to find a guy at a vendor booth talking about a product that actually knew something that was being ran on the back end, because that's typically where they just put either the attractive people or just the salesman, right. Or sometimes it's both in the same body. So to find a guy who actually knew something about the back end, knew something about their hardware, knew something about their software, was a very pleasant change of pace.
Hmm. Yeah, it is always nice when you can, when you know it's not just, you know, oh, they're on paragraph 3 of 6 on their spiel right now. They don't even know what's really happening. Yeah, if you can ask questions and get follow up and actually, you know, have good conversations with most of them. I would say for the most part, the folks I've talked to at conferences have been quite knowledgeable. But yes, I understand what you're saying you have run into in the past, and I'm glad it didn't happen there. And I think that also just goes to speak to the relevance of open source software in business nowadays, and seeing companies go, wow, we could utilize this and combine it with our idea and make a great product and then sell it. So why not do that?
Yeah, both the software and the hardware, because the bottom line is, it's much easier to stand on the shoulders of giants versus creating something completely yourself. But you have to understand, Cody, I did not have the patience to talk to any vendor. I was quite inebriated, and I just kept trolling the people I knew that were there, listening to them talk to a vendor for like 5 or 10 seconds, and then I just walked away. But in the 5 to 10 seconds I was trolling Matt Rainey, the guy said a couple magic words that piqued my interest and got me all giddy. So I actually stuck around for that guy.
Very nice. So overall, had a good time at the conference then?
Thanks to the people. As just like any other conference, there's nothing different. The conference itself, okay, it's okay. But being able to meet guys like Jeff Hallish, Corey Fruitman, Chris from RX Tech Team, Marvin B, getting to hang with Eric R. Dini, and Martin getting to meet guys like Paco and Andy, two of the local guys, who told me the truth, which was the part of town I was in. The pizza at best is mediocre, and the hot dogs are garbage. They will make you visit the bathroom a lot. But if you want some real Chicago food, they told me, come over here. They first asked me if I was okay with leaving this part of town, to which I knew exactly what they meant. We're going to a, you know, more
cultured,
real, quote-unquote, part of town. We are very cultured. And I had a breaded steak sandwich, which was fantastic. So I got to say, fantastic.
Oh.
I think I did see someone get mugged out front, but I was eating my sandwich.
Yeah, you're like, that's too bad anyway. What is this beef? What is this?
Exactly. But getting to meet all those guys, shake their hands, hang with them, talk with them, that was really the high point of the conference. I think I did figure out as well, if I'm going to even go to two conferences a year, I'm going to try to get what's called a TSA pre-approved, I believe is the
word. Oh, yeah, like the fast lane deal. Yeah. Yeah, man. Why not? Yeah.
Yeah, because it was a total of 2 hours of flights to go out there. No, it was a total of 4 hours, total of flights. I spent almost 2.5 hours combined in TSA lines.
Wow. Well, but that was at O'Hare, though, right?
It was an hour and a half here at BWI Thurgood Marshall Airport Sunday at 6 a.m.
What?
And over in O'Hare, Thursday at 6 in the morning, just about. I was there for like an hour and 10, hour and 20 minutes.
Wow, that's just crazy. Yeah, I mean, if it's worth it, you know, do it, man, do it.
Oh, it's hard to say it's not going to be worth it. And I will say I was reminded again why Podnuts is Podnuts, what makes Podnuts Podnuts, what differentiates Podnuts from a lot of other podcasts out there. And there is no secret. There is no special sauce. There is no magic software. There is no magic hardware. There is no payload that we're doing. We're not, you know, doing any trickery thing. Podnuts is real people first and foremost, normal people talking about things that they're passionate about, things that they like, things that they enjoy, things that they have experience on. And that's it. That is Podnuts. So I'd like to thank penguin.com for offering us coupon codes to freely give away to our listeners. There's no bribery. There's no payoff. There's no promise. There's no deal. There's no handshake. There's no nothing. It's just a company that we Podnuts like to believe is trying to do right by the end user, trying to do right by their freedom. And we are trying to do what we think is right, which is to support them.
Yeah. I can speak firsthand that, yeah, a lot of the people in this community are amazing, and they've done plenty for not only myself and Dor and some of the other hosts of the show, but just each other. You know, it's great to be able to speak to them about a variety of topics, especially when we meet in person, though. It's just on a whole nother level, which just goes to show what I've been saying for a long time now. If you ever have the next conference is close enough to you where you can drive to it and go meet some of your fellow compatriots, compodnutsians in person, definitely do yourself the favor and just do it.
Yeah, I mean, the main difference between most Linux conferences and most non-Linux conferences, in my super limited experiences, I believe CompTIA ChannelCon actually cost, I think it was $1,200 to attend, unless you followed a super secret code that was published in every show notes of Podnuts, to which it was free. Unlimited soda, basically everywhere you went. They had good breakfasts, lunches, food all around kind of thing. Took us to Wrigley Field for a day. You know, I don't know how I'm doing at Wrigley Field, but it was still fun. At Linux Conference, it's more just the hallway track, hang with people, going for lunch kind of thing. But it is all about the people, which is the really good part of a good part about any cons.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that you had a good time. And I'm sure that everybody who met you as well also had some fun. So I'm glad to hear it was good times to be had.
I do not know, but I will honestly put this out there to be very honest, to be very opening my robe kind of thing. I am really twitchy, nervous apprehensive, self-conscious around people at conferences. And it's not because of the people that are there. The people that are there, the people that I met, the people that I talked to, the people that I chatted with, everyone from Bryce Whitty from TechNibble, Matthew Rowe, Rowe Della from Your Friendly Neighborhood Computer Guy, Mike Smith, Kerry Holzman. I screamed at Kerry Holzman for about a good solid half hour while I was inebriated. They're all unbelievably nice people. It's not because of them. I'm just a little, it's a, like a social, it's like a mental puzzle. I have to figure out how I can be a little bit better, more outgoing when I'm there. Because honestly, I think there was more than a couple chances I could have gathered up some good content, but I feel a little weird saying to somebody just randomly, can we record something? Can we talk? Can we chat kind of thing? So I got to figure out how I can pull that off myself without literally almost being sick to my stomach from nerves. But I think I will pull it off.
I know you will. And I've seen it happen firsthand, everybody. It's quite adorable, him getting a little nervous. Because you're an opposing force of nature. You just need to tap into that and just, you know, oh, now's not a good time for you? Well, sit down anyway. And then you have a chair. And then you just do it. I'm sure you'll figure out a good rhythm.
Well, and I think I really need, the first thing I need to do is, like this podcast, for instance, I don't stutter really at all compared to other times during my day kind of thing. Even there, I don't stutter a lot anymore either. But I think it's all because I have the mindset that I'm a authority, if you will, because I'm sitting here doing this show. If you're listening to me, it's choice. It's not because you have to. It's not because I walked up to you and started talking to you.
Right.
I think I need to pitch myself to the conferences as a media outlet, if you will, where I think I'd feel more positive about, you know, showing myself as a media partner, if you will, rather than just a attendee who wears Podnuts hats and swag nearly every day.
There you go. Right. Sounds good.
Very cool. First link I wanted to bring up, I would say this is an example. Okay. There's a lot of different companies out there, closed source companies, open source companies, all different types, all different scales, all different sizes, all different morals, all different ethics, all different histories, all different manners of how they act and react in the public sector. Mozilla has had a little bit of a shaky past from time to time, and it's because they might not be doing everything completely right. And I do believe at least this was backed by Mozilla people. I don't know if this was an official Mozilla project, but it was called Matchstick. This was on Kickstarter probably about a year ago, if not more.
Yeah, I had no idea about this, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, a lot of Kickstarters out there, I'll just say, don't do a good job communicating. I raise my hand when I say that I'm not a great communicator through websites. They basically had a hard time after they made their money. And I do believe that they did more than make enough money that they thought it was going to take to have this project happen. But what happened was they put out a update not that long ago, July 2015, that basically said, after 11 months, we found out that we can't do this. This is too big for us. We bit off too much. We are going to refund 100% of the pledge money. It takes a certain kind of company in order to basically admit defeat and then to do the right thing, period, bar none, which is to return 100% of the money. And to me, this is just another level of respect that Mozilla and Mozilla people get from me.
Yeah, I had no idea about, I mean, I remember being very intrigued by the Kickstarter when it first launched, but I had no idea this thing was canceled. That has got to stink. But man, a lot of stuff lately with Kickstarter, I mean, it's not just Kickstarter, but other crowdfunding stuff has just kind of been a mess. There's a video game that I Kickstarted over a year, almost 2 years ago. And it just got delayed again, but the backers weren't notified until it hit the net through retailers. And I was just like, are you serious? Like, I give you, I was above and beyond upset, as was everybody else. and we're seeing several other projects. Well, at least these guys got to a certain point where they realized they couldn't do anything, and they are giving back all the money. I like that. But it's and that's much. I mean, as much as it stinks to not have the end product, that's much better than them blowing through the cash and going, oh, actually, we need another 200 grand. So here's a second wave, because if you guys really want it, you're going to need to do this too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing. They had their goal of $100,000. They made $470,000. Mm-hmm. They were estimating that they were going to start to ship the matchsticks in February. So this is like 6 months after the fact, after the ship date was supposed to be. I honestly think for a lot of people out there, it's a certain amount of, I would say, embarrassment that holds them back from saying what's happening, what's going wrong, what's not going right. There's no doubt in my mind. They had to take a hit out of their quote-unquote own pocket to refund everybody 100%, because I guarantee you a fair amount of that money, I mean, at least probably 30 to 50,000 of it was already spent in research and development and trying to get the manufacturing lined up and everything else. So they're going out of their way, I will say, to do the right thing. Because if you watch the TV show Shark Tank, which all over the world they have these kind of shows where there's smart people who are well-versed in products, have people bring them ideas. And the one thing they always repeat over and over and over and over again is, you know, like, how is this going to get made? Who's going to supply it? And what's your distribution path? So that is probably maybe the hardest thing. The idea is not the hardest thing. Getting a prototype is not the hardest thing. Developing a rapport to have someone continuously make it and then ship it and sell it is sounds like the hardest thing, and that's what sounds like they had the hard time with.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that it's not hitting the market, because I, out of all the computer sticks, I really wanted to play with a Firefox OS version. And that's not to say that something that another comparable product isn't coming out or in the works, but I liked the form factor of this. I liked the fact that it had the spot at the back end for like a lanyard or like a keychain. You know, it was really, really nice design there, and it was also the first of its kind on Kickstarter with Firefox OS, and now it's not happening. So it stinks, but I think they're handling it in a classy way, and I wish them the best of luck in the future.
Right. Yeah, it looks like it might not be, quote-unquote, anyway, officially aligned with Mozilla, but I swear I thought there was someone like from Mozilla who started this. I could be wrong, I could be mistaken, but either way, for anybody to do that, honestly, I tip their hat. Entrepreneurs, angel investors all say the same thing. And please don't believe me. Go check it for yourself. If you never fail, they will never give you any money. Because if you do not fail, then you do not learn anything in your life.
Yeah.
The way I'll put it, where I know Cody will instantaneously understand, is how many times playing Street Fighter when you first started playing it, did you just get crushed, just annihilated, just destroyed until you learned how to do everything that you need to do to win?
Oh, yeah.
There is no replacing the knowledge learned from failure. So my logic is the people behind this are probably going to not give up and come out with something else, and it very possibly, and my guess is, probably will be better.
Yeah, lessons to be learned, certainly. And yeah. Yeah, if I'm personally into buy one of these, I would rather have it with in a nice tiny form factor like that, with an quote unquote alternative operating system just to play with, because it's cheap enough. The Intel Compute Sticks, they're just out of my price range for what they are. I don't really see a use for them. And yeah, with the increased functionality through Chromecast. Quick aside here. HBO Now, you can now get on Android as of about 3 or 4 weeks ago. But as of less than a few days ago, you can now use Chromecast with the HBO Now app.
Oh, that's
and
big.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. Because didn't your satellite cable provider block HBO Go?
Yes. Yeah, you can get HBO Now through Roku and through some other gaming, some gaming consoles, 360, Xbox 360, excuse me, PlayStation 3, and so on and so forth. But with Comcast specifically, unless you were using HBO Go on an Xbox 360, Comcast had it blocked. So even though I'm a paying Comcast customer and I was using my Roku, which I purchased with my own money, and I could download the app, Comcast had it blocked to where I couldn't utilize the content off of HBO Go, which stunk. So, but that's all in the past. I don't have to go through Comcast. I don't even have TV through them anymore. I only have internet, and for good reason, because of crap like that. But now, my wife, you know, huge Game of Thrones nut. She loves, you know, Big Love. I love The Wire. Just fantastic shows. Huge availability for all the content on there. $15 a month, and now I get to stream it from my device. Well, not from my device because I have a rooted phone. Well, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
Bastards. But my wife's stock wink. Note 4. Is able to let us watch some of our favorite shows now at home on the big screen in the living room. So I'm very thankful for that. Aside done.
Very cool. I will say I'm not a TV person, but I do understand having it a la carte might cost a little bit more versus the packages you can get with your service, but the freedom it gives you is kind of hard to replace.
You know, you're right, and I'm going to go on about this just a little bit longer, but it's really relevant to where we are now, especially that we're on a podcast and everybody listening to this made, much like you said earlier, made a conscious decision to download this show. The on-demand and a la carte business model is fantastic. And like, well, for instance, my father-in-law just got a brand new, like 70-inch Samsung TV. The thing is gorgeous. And he was, I went up, set it up with his theater system and everything, and he's talking about getting, you know, an expanded Blu-ray collection and upgrading his cable package. And I was asking him what he's watching, what he wants to watch, and I am setting him up with HBO Now and Netflix. But the concept of that was completely foreign to him. He's like, wait, no, I don't have to pay Comcast for this. Are you sure? Is this legal? I was like, yeah, it's legal. You're going right to the source, and it's not on a schedule. You could just get to watch what you want when you watch it. And I explained to him the difference between that and DVR. And then we got to talking about what I listen to on my commute, because I commute about just under 2 hours a day. And I told him about podcasts, and he's like, oh, you don't listen to the radio? I said, I haven't listened to the radio since like 2005. And I said, I tried it once about a year ago, just because my phone died and I had to listen to something. I shut it off after like 5 minutes because of all the ads. Drove me out of my mind. So also introduced him to podcasts and to some YouTube channels for like boat repair and RV stuff that he's really interested in. He was just blown away. So a whole new world for him. But yeah, with all these alternative, you know, distribution methods of media, yeah, the old stuff is just going to go away soon. And I cannot wait for it because I haven't paid for cable in almost 10 years. And I'm really, really thrilled about it. And glad I'm not giving those companies that I don't want to support for furthermore, who aren't letting me utilize services that I'm legitimately paying for. I'm not giving them the time of the day, let alone money, to support themselves down the road. So, yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I could, if I could, I would do that right now. But let's just say I'm not in complete control of my own domain. And let's just hurry up and move to the next topic here. Okay. There's a thing on Windows that most technicians don't even do, and it's partially because there's not many places they can fully take advantage of it. Okay. Linux is truly a text-based operating system. Everything in Linux is a file, and a huge majority of those files are in clear text. Okay. Configuration files, settings files, import files, export files, those kind of things are always in clear text, unless, of course, it's an image or video or audio. So there's a thing on Linux that, if you haven't learned, can really help alleviate a lot of pain when you have two different computers and don't understand why things aren't exactly the same, or you just have two text files that one of them got changed and you're not sure which one got changed, when got changed, what got changed kind of things. And the term in Linux in the Unix world is diff, D-I-F-F. Okay. There's a couple tools mentioned over here on how to forge. The first one is called diff use. The second one is built right into LibreOffice. And these are just two tools. There's probably 80, if not more, of these kind of tools that can basically let you side-by-side see two text files, and it highlights what is not the same in each of the files. Most of the time you see color showing you green means it's added to in this file, red means it's taken away from this file, blue means it's mismatching in the files kind of thing. So it's a very good graphical way to quickly spot differences in text files. Where I would say I would use it is in my IRC chat application. When I thought I had the thing set up the same, yet this one looks and acts a little bit different than this one on my other computer, I can take those config files, slap them in a directory, and just say, show me the differences in those files. And I can quickly say, okay, let me go to this file, make this setting over here. And then I have everything identical. This is really good when also, you're looking at, repositories of like file revisions or file versions. A lot of tools will tell you this file is newer than that file, or this file does not match that file, but to actually use a diff tool can show you line by line what is actually different.
And that is crucial for finding out, like what you were saying, why is this working? What's happening here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I have friends who have pulled their hair out for far too many hours into her days trying to get a piece of code to work or like an HTML document, something. And they realize, oh yeah, that semicolon isn't supposed to be there.
Right. And in the Windows world, I always use the Notepad++ because it had that.
Oh, okay.
Because as a domain admin, there was more than a couple times where I needed to look at two files and spot the difference without literally going line by line. Because, you know, nobody really has time for that. And then if you do have time for that, you need to reorganize how you're doing your work because you shouldn't have time.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Exactly, with bronchitis and everything. Next link, there's literally like 15 different Pi things in my list that I'm not bringing to the show. But this one I almost had to because Raspberry Pi over at LinuxGizmos.com. Raspberry Pi gains a $35 hat. And a hat is basically a board you can slap on top of the Raspberry Pi physically. And it's the same proportions. It might be just a touch different, but it's really close. For $35, the high-end Raspberry Pi, for $35, this hat. And it's a touchscreen interface.
But it's resistive. So isn't that to be used with a stylus and not a finger?
You can use your finger. It's just harder to
press. Right. Okay, yeah, because capacitive is what's on most smartphones. That's the best to be used with fingers, yeah.
Yes, and most of the time, resistive is single point of touch, and capacitive has the ability to be up to, like, 10 or 12 points of touch.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. To me, this could be the perfect kind of in-dash system, and I was listening to, I believe, Aaron Newcomb on, might have been Floss Weekly, but I think it was all about Android, where he was talking about putting a resistive touch panel in a car. And he said it almost made more sense because when you're in a car, you're driving around, you're bumping, it's hard to be exact.
Yeah.
And you might very possibly and probably gently touch it when you don't mean to touch it. So to have to forcefully touch it actually made it a better experience.
Well, that and also I have a 2008 or 2009 Prius, and I can say that the touch panel in that is probably resistive as well, but it's very direct. I almost liken it to like L-cars from Star Trek, mm-hmm. where it's not like I'm navigating a web page and I have to like zoom in or pinch and zoom or hit something for a drop-down menu. It's this button does this, where it's very deliberate. If I'm pressing here, this is what's going to happen. So that's nice, but on a 2.4-inch screen, the UI for whatever software it's running has got to be, I mean, it, well, depending on the application, it has to be utilizing some sort of a bigger button interface mm-hmm. to really work. But yeah, much like what you're saying, in a car, I think that would be utilized very well. And how is it only $35?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. See, that's really cool.
It is. And I will say, and you did, I think, hit the nail on the head. If you have this in your house kind of thing, you can hook up a keyboard and a wireless mouse or whatever. You can do whatever you want to do. But in a car, you would really need a specialized interface. Like I could see there being, you know, maybe 6 buttons on the screen and basically filling the screen of play, pause, rewind, fast forward, or, you know, library or some other mode kind of button. But there is what looks like also 5 physical buttons on the bottom. That could be like your hotkeys of switching mode from podcast to music to video or something else. But they would have to be programmed. And there's plenty of ways to program hotkeys.
Right.
In Linux. So.
And also, I'm thinking of this too. When you think of, okay, being used in a car, where do I put it? What's the physical application? And what's nice is if you get, I mean, I'm sure they got to be out there too. There has to be a case, or at least not right now, but on the way soon, that would be able to utilize this to its full potential. But that's going to be not that much wider than the Pi itself, according to the size of the board here, which means that if you have most, if not just about any, one of the smartphone sort of like a dashboard clamps, that should be able to hold that as well in place, and you could run the audio definitely the power, power and or audio cable in a neat fashion just along the side or the back. And yeah, it, because too many people, I have a buddy of mine who built an in-car system with some Pis, and he went so far as to buy a custom, like a dashboard plate. Or excuse me, and then had it, you know, Dremeled out just to fit and everything. And I was thinking, yeah, that's great, but how much did that cost? And it was like over $600. Like, I guess you did that for a $35 computer.
Yeah. See, I could see taking a normal case and just like Dremeling out the top. And then just having like Velcro or something.
Yeah, there
slap
you go.
It on your dash.
Yeah, see?
Kind of thing. I honestly might pick one of them up just to play with, but I'm really not sure yet. If I do, it's probably not going to be till after OLF because, you know, conferences.
Because Bill's son.
Something like that, yeah. Yes. And really quick before we go to the next link, I just want to also reiterate podnets.com/Linux for the Rest of Us Club. I did throw out there something to the effect of, well, if you want to see something, let me know and I can record it and I can put it up as a video or whatever. I'm not complaining. Because it ain't like I got a whole lot of time on my hands, but I literally got 0 hits back from that. So what I will say is, to the newest of the newest of the newest Linux user, or the guy who just really needs help hand-holding for something, it isn't like in the video I'm going to say you by name and call you out kind of thing, so you don't have to be embarrassed about having to ask for help. Just tell me something that you guys want to see done, how it's done. How do you do this? How do you do this? And it could just be, well, how does Door do A, B, or C? And I got no problem making that video and putting it up on YouTube for everyone to watch, but announced to the club, to the newsletter kind of thing. So if there's something out there you want to see, either how I do it or how it can be done, just don't hesitate. Shoot an email to the show. If you're in the club, I tell you, you'll get preferential treatment if I get 2 or 3 at the same time kind of thing.
There you go. Yeah, it's always nice to read tutorials or to watch videos or, you know, read, you know, up on what you want to do. But I would say a lot of the cool stuff that I've ever done with computers in general has always been me sitting down with a buddy and going, wait, what are you doing there? And then him showing me a workflow or a piece of software he's using to, you know, do task XYZ. So, yeah, it is valuable. And plus, Door's leaving himself up open for this for free. It doesn't cost anything. So, yeah, if you do think of something that you would like to see, please send an email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com or just sign up for the club, and you can send it in that way as well, and you guys will be notified when that content goes up and live.
Absolutely. Okay, what I have here next, it's from Make Tech Easier, and I'm happy to say, if you listen to this show for any length of time, the headline to this article is not correct. Okay, We brought this distro up well over a year ago. And then to be honest, thanks to Jeff Owens and his repetitively saying it to me after that, that I gave it a chance. The article is called Voyager X8, one of the best Linux distros you've never heard of. The only way I can put it is this is not your daddy's Linux. This is not your standard Linux. This is not your Ubuntu built for human beings Linux. This is not your Fedora developer based distribution Linux. This is not Red Hat, your enterprise focused Linux. This is Voyager. This is a French distribution. And if you know anything about French culture, French arts, French expression, if you will, they tend to do things a little bit differently than a lot of other people. There's definitely more than a couple unique twists about this distribution. I highly encourage people check it out. I will say Voyager X8 is based off of Debian. I truly and honestly believe the more Ubuntu does stuff like I believe it's called Landscape or Portrait or whatever, the more they do stuff like Snappy Packages, more they do stuff like Unity Launcher, the more relevant, the easier it's going to be for Debian and Debian-based distributions to get more and more popularity. And this is a Debian-based distribution. And the only way I can put it is, this is a Debian distribution done exactly right. It's definitely focused more towards younger people. It's definitely focused more towards home entertainment, YouTube watching, music listening kind of thing than a workstation. But it's Linux, so you can do whatever you want with it. But I really do like where this distro starts off. It has built-in stuff like Konki, a standalone YouTube player, GIMP, Clementine.
Oh, Clementine. Love Clementine.
Kodi.
I'm right here, Dork.
Radio Tray. Yeah, I'm right here, too. Yeah. Sorry. Fried. Sorry.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. You got it. Yeah.
I'm there.
Okay, he's caught
Kodi.
Up.
I know. It only takes about 40 seconds. And they do have a UEFI version or a standard BIOS version, which I will say, I don't see a lot of distributions advertising they have both of those versions. I'm sure most of the big ones do. But that's just another reason why this is a safe, quote unquote, distribution to download and check out. And with a 30-second Windows 10 rant. Every operating system steals from every other operating system since the beginning of time. Okay, only a few things are truly unique, truly inventive, truly, you know, unique to any operating system. But then, of course, another operating system takes it and abuses it kind of thing. I will just say there is more than a couple things after running Windows 10 for a couple days now that are borrowed from Linux. And to be honest, general Linux, more than a couple things, but from KDE directly, at least three or four things I saw just reminded me exactly of what I saw in KDE like 2 or 3 years ago. So I will say, I believe this is going to be one of the most best desktop user experiences of any Windows operating system because of what they're borrowing from other OSs. And to be honest, the polish they put it together with.
Yeah. when I was reading, you know, months ago, the top 20 killer features of Windows 10. And you could just go, that's on Linux, that's on Linux, that's on Linux, just over and over and over. And but you know what isn't in Linux?
Lots of stuff.
That user license agreement and privacy policy that you have to sign off to use Windows 10. And all I'm gonna say is, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, Google that, or if you're a huge Windows fanboy, Bing that, by all means. They use Yahoo, by the way. It's not really Bing. And find out exactly what you're sort of signing away in order to use that operating system and ask yourself, do I really want to do this? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, the last Security Now, Steve Gibson basically said, I'm old. I make Windows software, so I have to run Windows, but I'm going to retire. Windows 7 is supported through 2020. I think it's a 2020. He said, so I'm never going to use Windows 10 and I never will use Windows 10, period, because of all of the things it wants to do, all of the cloud centric thing it does, all of the things you really should agree with and enable if you want the full Windows 10 experience. There's a lot. There's a hell of a lot that they're trying to do. And basically, they're trying to be, just to paraphrase Steve Gibson, they're trying to be more like Google by having all these cloud-enabled features and functions. And I don't think people want more stuff like that. They want the option for it, but I don't think they want it to be on by default.
Right. Yeah. But then, didn't Gibson do something recently where he was going over, like, he had actually installed Windows 10?
I do believe he did it on a VM or something to see it, and that's where he, you know, got all of his rants from.
Oh, got it. Okay. And also, to Jeff Owens, you're welcome. One of the reasons... Oh, okay, so, but I meant to ask you a quick question about that, though, but because you've been running Voyager, or had run it for a while, right?
It was on my Lenovo Flex 15 for months.
Okay.
I'm now dual booting between that and Windows 10.
Okay. Now, you, having run it, was the default desktop environment XFCE? Is that right?
I think it depends on the version, because they got like 5 versions.
Okay.
But I do believe the most used desktop they have is XFCE.
Yeah, because Jeff, I remember, God, this was almost 4 years ago now, sent me a Voxer message. That's crazy to think I've been using it that long. Thanking me up and down for telling him my experience with Voyager Linux and how it was perfect for him, singing its praises. It was a big 3, 4, or 5 minute long message, and I send a message back to him. I've never run it before. I don't know what you're talking about. And he thought that I was a big diehard Voyager guy, so that's why he installed it. And so now it's like come full circle, where now he's infected many people with this propaganda. No. It is a great distro, very, very pretty, but it's not pretty flashy, like whiz-bang pretty. It's just, much like what Dor said, it's done very, very well with not necessarily a particular user in mind, but it definitely caters to what a lot of people use their computers for with a very specialized software set. So if you're looking for a new distro or just want to run it in you know, a live environment off a disk or in a VM, I would definitely check it out because it is very, very cool. I like it a lot.
Yes, and I will say it maybe is the highliest? It is the most polished XFCE desktop I've seen, period, bar none. Better than Zubuntu, I would say threefold better. Most people who use XFCE don't do anything. They just have a background,
right?
One panel, and then one
bar. Our color scheme is brown.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, they actually go out of their way to do a lot of little tweaks, the little things, the little niceties to try to make it a better experience. And to be honest, I didn't like XFCE for the most part until I ran Voyager.
Huh. Well, you know, I just got a laptop of mine back from Martin, and I was looking for something lightweight to throw on. I think I'm going to throw this on there, because I threw Ubuntu 14.04 on it this morning, and it's running like a Chihuahua towing a Buick with its neck. It's not running very well.
I guess that's a normal-sized Chihuahua and a normal-sized
Buick. Yes. Yes, I'm thinking maybe even perhaps a petite and or toy Chihuahua who is struggling and whimpering. And it cannot move the Buick.
Right. Well, you know, you'll have it.
I guess so.
This next zone to throw out there, this next link, this is over at TechMint, TECMINT.com. And just because it looks pretty deep, it is called Beginner's Guide for Linux, Start Learning Linux in Minutes. And unfortunately, it's in all caps for some.
Because it's important.
Yeah. I was talking to a buddy, to be honest, a really good friend of mine, about his son. His son is now 14 or 15 years old. And we were talking about higher education, military, things his son could do. He's not tech savvy. And I had to explain to him, what you got to think of the future for your son is anything and everything he wants to learn is already out there for free. It's just waiting in a bunch of different places. The question is, will he find one that he likes how it's presented and can he take it in? The reason for proper quote-unquote schooling or a trade school or a certification thing is just to get the piece of paper showing that you did do it and you did know it and you did pass some kind of standardized test for it. But to get the knowledge itself, you don't need to pay money. You do not need to invest tens and thousands of dollars just to know something. You should only spend the money when you want to get the piece of paper saying you know something. And this is a good example. You can go to Linux Academy. You can go to IT Pro TV. You can go to CompTIA. You can go to training centers. You can go to college. You can go to anywhere you want to get any kind of certification for Linux, for Red Hat, for RHEL, for cloud, for whatever, whatever. But try to learn as much as you can on your own before you go there. And this to me looks like a really good intro to a lot of the basics of Linux. They looks like they're focusing on CentOS. So it's definitely more of a business focused learning environment that they're giving you. And it looks, to be honest, pretty deep, literally like 60 different links linking to at least, I'd say, 18 sections.
Yeah, this is quite extensive. When it says, it's a bit misleading, I must say, because when it says beginner's guide, like, oh, cool, you know how to set up, maybe how to, you know, choose a distro, set up your machine, do backups, navigation. I mean, if you go, I think it was like 18 or 19 sections down below, 21. Yeah, it gets you, you know, all the way through, you know, going down to basic shell scripting, Linux interview questions, like how to prep you for the real, like going to get in a job, a source for free Linux books for learning, Linux certification prep guides. I mean, this is a hell of a resource when it comes to learning any of this stuff. And it's not just specifically for the guy who's brand new or the guy who's been using it for a couple years and wants to learn a little bit more. This is spans just about everybody aside from the, you know, the very knowledgeable professional who already has a job in the industry. This is very nice.
Yeah. The only way I can put it, this is a pro level type of information you're getting. The difference is they appear to start you out at a super beginner level. So the first paragraph or two of a couple sections, you can probably just skip right past because you already know it kind of thing. But this is the kind of thing where I've already bookmarked for when my son starts asking me questions about computers and stuff, because, you know, the Linux boot process is similar to other operating systems boot processes. The only difference is it's well documented and you can edit it. So this is good.
Yeah, I can't wait to dive into some of this when I have some more free time, which I don't know when that's going to happen, but we'll see.
Well, as soon as hell freezes over, Cody.
Yeah, I'm just, I'm waiting for pigs to start flying, because you know what that means.
Bacon delivered?
Bacon buffalo wings. Oh, yeah, think about that for a minute. Wrap your head around that, America, and everybody else that's listening to this show.
Very cool, very cool.
What would you dip them in, though? You can't go
anything you wanted.
You can't dip bacon wings in ranch. You wouldn't dip ham in ranch.
First off, I don't dip anything in ranch. When I get buffalo wings, I just take the heat like a man.
Oh, man. You don't even know.
I do.
It's not because they're hot. It's good. Because they're better.
I pass. I just eat buffalo. But I don't know. Honey?
It's got to be something weird. Yoplait cherry yogurt. Are you out of your mind? And then you try it, and you're just like, oh my God, I haven't lived.
I'll have to take your word on that one, too.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Okay, one more here. We have in some of our streams and feeds, honestly, almost got overwhelmed with the number of small form factor computing devices that have been out there. I will say that. There's a whole bunch. This one caught my eye just a little bit, okay? First off, it's called Endless, E-N-D-L-E-S-S, number one. Number two, it looks a lot different than what you would expect a micro desktop would look like. It almost looks like a ghost from Pac-Man kind of thing. Three, obviously, because, you know, you're talking to Door Geek here, it's running Linux. It has the absurd goal, I'm going to say, of trying to be, quote-unquote, the computer for anybody, for everybody, for the rest of the world, for the non-tech lyric, for the non-technophiles, if you will. If you go to endlessm.com, that's their actual website. You can see, what they say is order one, for $169 with 32 gigs of internal storage, or 500 gigs of internal storage for $229. This is a sign up. This is not really a buy. This is, you're signing up to buy it when it comes out. They do go over a little bit of, technologies with it. It looks like a customized version of Ubuntu Linux with a very customized GNOME shell, kind of thing. It's all about the interface. If they do the interface right, the presentation of streams and feeds and resources and videos and content, this could really be kind of cool. And for $169 for the low end model, this is kind, this could be really tempting to people. This is the kind of thing I'm going to keep my, eye on to see when it develops. What is the interface like? Look for people talking about it and showing it off to see how it looks, because it could be really cool.
I liked the campaign that they ran to sort of advertise this along with the video, because it made a lot of sense that a lot of people in the third world, especially, or a lot of people around the world, I should say, have access to a display, but they don't have access to a computer. And the form factor of this thing is pretty neat. And looking at the customized, you know, version of the operating system here, it looks very nice. And more importantly, very intuitive for someone who may not have owned their own computer before, or who is just learning this operating system versus something they had used previously. So anything to get computers in the hands of more people, especially, I mean, if you talk about a grand vision, they have a big one. And I wish them the best of luck.
Yeah, and I will say, some of the things that I like about the device is HDMI and a VGA output, which means it can support archaic monitors or it can support higher-end TVs. I almost see no point to having a DVI to have DisplayPort on a device. I think it's still not worthwhile because there's so many devices out there that don't take it. Everything either takes HDMI or VGA, so I definitely like that. Standard edition does come with a gigabit Ethernet port. The higher-end version also does have Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and a built-in speaker. So if you buy the low-end version, you do not get Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, or a speaker. But if all you need is HDMI out to your device that already has speakers built in, and you can hardwire yourself into a network jack, the low end looks like it's just fine. 2 gigs of RAM on a properly formed Linux distribution, I will say, is plenty of RAM. And by plenty, I mean almost overkill on RAM. My Lenovo has 8 gigs of RAM. Most distributions I run, really, I have to push something hard for it to use more than like 800 megs.
Yeah, if it's optimized correctly, you know, a gig or two will work just fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless, of course, you're doing some kind of higher-end video editing or something.
Unless you're me or you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I will say, this episode, there was no video switching. And it's not the fault of OBS, and it's not the fault of Jitsi. I logged into 2 accounts. And I went to my YouTube dashboard and I went to start the stream. The screens look different. So they're in the middle of rolling something out. It's called YouTube Live Events Stream Now Beta or something like that. So they're in the middle of rolling something out and I could not get OBS to even connect to YouTube. So something on YouTube and change that would not allow me to stream from that interface. So this week we're just doing a normal Google Hangout on air, and it makes me a little upset. But, you know, you got to take what you can get.
Yeah. We're not going to let their upgrade schedule get in the way of us delivering you this show. You're welcome.
Well, and that's, to be honest, the plus and the minus about cloud software. They don't have to tell me or anybody else, we plan on upgrading our service between this date and this date. You might experience problems. No, they don't care, to be quite in fact, that they inconvenienced me, because who the hell am I? They just roll updates out whenever they feel like it. So they felt like doing it, and it just so happened it directly contradicted our schedule here today.
Yeah. Oh well. I'm not going to say I'm forgiving them, but we're going to let it slide today.
Yeah. Next time I see someone from Google, I'm going to point at them very violently.
There's going to be a very, very tepid and lukewarm. Wait, that's the same. Tepid and flat beer purchased for that person as a cruel joke. And when they take a sip, they'll know what the score is.
Let them have it.
I'm going to. All right. Don't worry. I'll put it on the Podnos expense account. Very cool. Okay. Lots of good topics this week, Dor. So, in closing, you had a good time at not only CompTIA, but at Linux Fest Northwest, and you're looking forward to FOSSCon and OLF. And the community should reach out to you. And I would urge all of you, have him be the one thing that pushes you off of the fence if you've been thinking about going. Because just to meet this guy in person, I mean, he's not going to brush you off, give you an autograph, and like walk away, or just kind of, you know, like grab your hand like he's a politician just trying to grab votes. This guy will talk to you. He's very fun. He's very nice.
Yeah. You remember Barnacle Joe.
Oh, man.
Okay. There was a guy in Chicago that we didn't meet until Wednesday night.
Yeah.
He's a guy about my age. I'll just say
no, he was age. Way younger than you. You're an old man.
No, not Barnacle Joe. This is a
different guy. Oh, okay, all right.
We met Wednesday night at CompTIA, and he basically shook my hand and said, "Hell, I'm really glad to meet you. Really glad to meet you. Really glad to meet you." And then, like 5 seconds later, Jeff Hallisch said, "I'm going to go up to the room, sit down, and relax for a little bit while these guys are over here. I'm just going to take it easy." And whoever was standing around, me and Jeff basically said, "Well, do you guys want to come up?" And the guy's name is Jerry. He said, "Well, I don't want to." I don't want to impose. I don't want to inconvenience you guys. You're not. Come on. Let's go. Turns out he was a local guy to Chicago. We took him to Rico Bebe's, R-I-C-O-B-E-B-E, I believe is the name of the place where we got the breaded steak sandwich. Ooh. And he said, "I cannot believe you guys are okay with me like tagging along." He said something like getting in your way or something. I'm like, that's not it. At all. We like talking to people. He said, "Well, yeah, but I thought you guys would be like, you know, too busy, or, you know, you have something going on, or, you know, you or something you have to do. Why would you want to sit down and talk to me?" I said, "First off, Jerry, Podnuts is," and I say it again, "normal people. First and foremost, we're not tech journalists. We are not trying to be internet celebrities. We're not trying to be pompous people. We're not trying to sit in our ivory tower and preach down to you. You are us. The only difference is we have a mic in front of us. There is no difference. You send us an email, we answer. You tweet us, we answer. You contact us in any shape or form, we answer. And we don't just answer, we want to hold a conversation." So he was from Chicago. He didn't even know this place existed, Rico Bebe's, which I found out it's been there for like 35 years or 40 years.
Oh, wow.
And he said, "It's one of the best meals he's ever had."
Nice.
And I'm like, "Well, there you go. There you go, man." So if Jerry's listening, which I got the impression he's a Windows computer repair guy, he probably isn't listening to this, and that's okay. But if he is listening, Jerry, next time I'm in Chicago, trust me, we will hang out again and sit down and talk. Because we had really good conversations about business, computer repair, what's right, what's wrong, things they're seeing that are happening, things they're seeing that are not happening, you know, changes that are coming kind of thing. It was a really interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does sound cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that somebody else had a good time.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
Very good. All right, Dor. So, in closing, where can we find you online?
There is now, it's not really running, up and running, 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 up and running, 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 a Podnuts Google Plus account. I'm going to use it. That's going to be the one-way broadcast thing. Where you'll be able to go for Podnuts related stuff. But if you want me, Door to Door Geek on Google Plus, Door to Door Geek on Twitter, Stephen Glack on Facebook, but you know, I'm not there a whole lot. You can just shoot an email to me at doordoorgeek@gmail.com or email the show, contact the show.
Very good. All right. And if you guys want to get a hold of me, send me an email to cody@podnuts.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Cody Cooper or just search for Cody Cooper on Google Plus. I am there several times a day. It's probably the, aside from a direct mail, that's the best way to just get a hold of me if you want to chat. Throw us a thank you for the show, a comment, what was suggestion, whatever, be more than happy to hear it, because I love interacting with you, the community. It's been a blast, and I don't want to say we're just getting started, because we're generally started. We're on episode 187. We're definitely started, but lots more to come, lots more to learn, and lots more to give to you, the listeners. So thank you again, once again, for listening to the show. If you want to send us a voicemail, please call 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Try your best to keep it under 60 seconds. If it's a little bit over, that's fine. But if it's significantly longer, plan ahead, break it up into two or three voicemails, send them. We'll play them back-to-back weeks, or maybe even two on one show if you're really good. And if you want to send an email just to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxtherestofus.com. We will go ahead and answer. We'll be doing an email episode, kind of a correspondence episode soon. We'll get through our backlog of emails and a couple of voicemails, and just kind of clear the chutes, as it were, and get down to business. And speaking of business, you guys once again have been setting records as far as your participation with our affiliate links through Amazon, Newegg, and eBay. So please keep using them, especially though, podnuts.com/Amazon. Any purchases you make on Amazon, just use that link. Exact same interface as you would see normally, but we get a little bit of a kickback, and that money goes to helping us with all sorts of stuff on the back end, especially the new website that Dor's been teasing for a while. It's coming along well. Right, Dor?
Very well.
Very well. Very well. And a lot of it wouldn't be possible if you guys weren't supporting us through those links. So we really do thank you very much for all of the support. And we're back on sort of a regular schedule. I hope to have another episode with you back to you in 7 to 8 days from it launching today when you listen to it. So thank you again for all your support. And please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.